So today is February 11th. We are under 24 hours from the first big fantasy draft event of the season, Labor Mixed. And what we're doing tonight is we're recording some questions before that draft. You won't hear this until after that draft's complete, but what we like to do is we like to just kind of go over the draft and some strategies and kind of see how that plays out. And this year, it's been Brett Sayre in the past, and Brett Sayre and I have partnered in Labor Mixed in the past, but this year we're passing Labor Mixed off to our editor, Zach Steinhorn. So I'm just going to ask Zach like three or four really basic questions here, and we're going to see how it actually played out. So first of all, Zach, are you ready? Are you feel like you're set? I mean, I know the first draft is kind of tough because you've got like nothing to look at.
Yeah, this is really the earliest draft I've ever done, outside of mock draft. So this is going to be a little challenging. But I think I'm fairly ready. Drafts, you always have to be prepared for things out of the ordinary to happen. So that actually especially holds true in auctions, but even in snake drafts, those kind of scenarios happen. It does help to go into the draft with just at least a vague idea of what you want to do, at least in the first few rounds.
Yeah, so Labor Mix is it's a standard 5x5 roto. It uses batting average, 15 team mixed, and you have the number 5 pick overall. So my question here, who do you expect will be there at 5, and who are you looking at taking in that slot?
Well, it's interesting because the Francisco Lindor injury changes things a little bit. I mean, that one player who I may have thought would slip to me at 5 will no longer be available. But even before the Lindor injury, I was really looking at one of either JD Martinez or Nolan Arenado. I think actually with the Lindor injury, probably Scherzer is going to be taken either 4th or maybe even 3rd. So I'm pretty certain that both Martinez and Arenado will be available to me. And in that case, I'm leaning towards Arenado right now. He has such a high floor from a four category perspective. And what he also does is, in this era, batting average is probably the most overlooked rotisserie category. And what Arenado offers is he allows you to draft one or two of those 250 average, 25 plus home run hitters. So he allows you to do that while at the same time still being competitive in the batting average category. So Martinez offers the same thing, but Martinez in 2016 and 2017 dealt with injuries in both of those seasons. So to me, that durability edge gives Arenado just the slight advantage.
Yeah, and I'd add to that before we move to the next question that out in a 12-team mix, it might be a little bit different, but in a 15-team mix, the corner kind of drops off to me like quickly, even more so than outfield. So grabbing a top or maybe the top corner infielder in the game right now is a pretty big maneuver. So I'm just curious, Zach, as far as the first 10 rounds go, and I did mention this, are you looking more, are you looking at a specific split for hitter pitchers and what you're looking to do in, say, the first 8 to 10 rounds?
I don't know about maybe 10 rounds, but I'd say the first 6 or 7 rounds, I want to make it a point to draft one of those elite group of aces, just because I think that the drop off between that group and the next tier of starting pitchers is just so steep this year. By drafting one of those aces, you get both quantity and quality. So I'm going to definitely try to make it a point to do that. In the past, I never even thought about drafting a starting pitcher in the first few rounds, but this year I'm prepared to take one at as early as the second round. I'm hoping to that either Corey Kluber, Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, or Aaron Nola, one of those four are available. I'm hoping that I'll have the opportunity to draft one of them. And if not, I'll just go with a hitter there and possibly take maybe Carlos Carrasco or Luis Severino in the 3rd. So, but generally, I might say I want my top 7 or 8 picks. I'm looking to get two starting pitchers, one of the pitchers being an ace. And then also securing at least one reliable closer. But other than that, I'm pretty open. I think value-based drafting could be dangerous sometimes because it could lead to situations where you're almost forced to make a trade during the season to balance out your categories. So I'd say if I had to classify myself, I'm generally more of a category-based drafter. So that's the approach I'm going to take going into this draft.
And I'd say when Brett and I were doing labor, the last year we did it together was 2016. The only real problem we had with value drafts, and you kind of mentioned this, were closers. We had the first draft we did, and even the year we won, like we didn't draft enough saves. We got lucky. That was the year that Jason Grilley became the closer really early in Atlanta because of an injury, and we put a lot of fab on him. But you are right. Like you do have to. I still believe in value, but you do have to be a little careful with that. Like, you can't just say I'm going to do value, and then the 15th round comes around, and you're like, oh, I don't have a closer. Particularly this year, you know, if you look at the closers out there, it's really thins out after I say the first like 8 to 10.
And especially in industry leagues, you really can't be sure that you're going to be able to pull off a trade with someone. So you almost have to come out of the draft being very comfortable with the team you have, and maybe you make a few nice, you know, waiver wire pickups early in the season. But I think to rely on making a trade that early in the season is just a little bit risky.
Yeah, I agree. In industry leagues, one, I don't know about your experience, but mine for the most part, when people know you need something, I mean, and even when they don't know you need something, when they know you need something, they really try to rake you over the coals. And there's no sense of like, all right, well, you know, I'll give a little this time to, you know, get a little next time. That doesn't happen.
Nope, definitely not. And you don't want to put yourself in those kinds of situations.
Yeah. So anything else before we wrap up this pre-segment?
No, I'm just hoping that all my plans play out. I'm not completely. I think it's, you know, dangerous to be too focused on certain players and certain positions, but at the same time, you can't be too unprepared going into the draft. You have to have a general idea, because once you're on the clock, you know, you have a minute to make your pick, and you can't wait to the last second.
Yeah, although I mean, it's good where you are, because you're at the five, so you will have some time to watch things unfold. Like I kind of hate either being on the end or the middle for that reason. Like making two picks sometimes is really like a boom boom thing, and you don't really have a lot of time to think it through. Labor tends to draft fairly aggressively on pitching, and they've done that even before like it fell off, as I agree with you. So you might have a hard time kind of getting that done, you know, just because of that reason. I think in some drafts you're correct. Like that pick would be, I think, what, the 26th pick for you in the second round?
Yeah, it's 26.
I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, I think Kluber will be gone, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a run there in the mid-second round where you might be looking more at, like, Bauer or you know, someone like the Corbin or someone that next level down. I don't know how it's going to play out. We'll see. Where, you know, knowing you might be like, yeah, that's like a stretch to take one of those guys that early. So, yeah, it does lead to my last question. I know there's overlap in these leagues and, you know, the competition's strong. You've played with some people, you know, in this league before. I know Tout Mix has a few, some overlap. You know, I know you're in some other expert leagues. Will this alter your approach? Like, will this change things for you? Or are you just kind of looking at it like, nah, you know, I'm just going to go in, have my draft, not really worry about other people, and just, you know, let the chips fall where they may?
There are a few people who I've been in leagues with them in the past, but I think specifically in drafts, I don't think it makes much of a difference. I think the one area where it makes a difference in is maybe in-season trade negotiations, because you have a general idea of which owners are, you know, reasonable in trades, which owners are good trade partners, as opposed to owners who maybe are just always their asking prices are just so unreasonable that it might not even be worth your time to reach out to them. So in that sense, I think it helps you, you know, to be familiar with the owners. But from a draft day perspective, I don't think it matters that much. Even if you kind of have an idea of an owner's tendencies from previous years, there's no sure thing that they're going to stick to those tendencies. Maybe they'll purposely change things up just to kind of throw you off balance. So in that case, you know, I don't think the draft is an area where that could help you at all. It's more of an in-season.
Yeah, I think the one thing that could influence it is, you know, you pick fifth, so I'm kind of pulling up the order now. You're next to Rudy Gamble and Todd Sola. No, actually, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong year. Who are you next to?
I'm next to Ryan Bloomfield, I think, is number six. I don't know who's number four.
All right. So, I mean, that kind of influences a little bit. Like, if you, like, I've been next to people where I've played with them before. I know their tendencies. I know they're pitcher heavy. And I might, particularly if I'm in the middle, I might be like, yeah, I'm just going to wait. And, because I know this person is going to go after hitters. But I do generally agree with you. I think that for the most part, you just have to have your draft. Okay. I think that's really it. I'd say we're going to do 15 minutes here. We actually did 10. You'll get to hear this, like I said, next week when our labor podcast comes out and we actually see how Zach did. So I think we're all looking forward to that. And Zach, are you excited for tomorrow night?
Yep, I think it'll work out pretty fine.
Good luck.
Thanks.
And welcome to episode 186 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus podcast. This is the labor podcast. I know it's almost a week out, but we will be talking about labor mixed. We'll be talking specifically about Zach Steinhorn and what he did in that draft. We have Zach with us. It was actually his first labor mixed draft, and we're going to talk a little bit about that experience as well. So we'll just kick it off right away. Behind the glass, we have Jim Makramos of the BP Stats team. But as I mentioned before, we have Zach. Zach, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing okay. Still waiting on Harper and Machado. So it's becoming a constant joke now. So
yeah, although it really looks like with Harper in particular, like but before a lot of the rumors were very vague, and it almost seemed like some of the usual suspects like John Heyman were kind of trying to push the story, and now a lot of the chatter with Harper is very specific, and it almost sounds like we're near the end. And I'm hearing here, particularly locally in Philadelphia, there's a lot of chatter, which makes me believe that the Phillies either are going to get him or they're about to put their best offer out there, and Harper's going to either pick it or go somewhere else.
Yeah, that seems like what's going to happen, but who knows?
Yeah,
it's off season.
Well, I know it's true. We've had days like this that have had a lot of has happened, and then all of a sudden it dies off, and you're like, what's even going on? So yeah, it's kind of weird. So let's dive right into labor. I mean, we could talk about Mike Moustakas if we wanted to. I mean, briefly as far as the news on him, but I think we can probably skip that. There's a transaction analysis up at BP, and really the thing about Moustakas is less him and more of the playing time with like Travis Shaw and Kesson Hira possibly being, staying down longer. But I think we can probably skip that for the most part. So unless you have something to add on Moustakas, let's just jump into labor.
Well, the one thing would be just the second base eligibility. That's a key fantasy factor where, you get a guy who's who had a 30-85 guy playing second base. So keep an eye out on that. It'll take, 15 games, 20 games, but that definitely enhances his value.
Yeah, I do think it matters a little less than it did a few years ago, just because it's both positions are rich. It used to be middle infield and second in particular is kind of weak, but I know what you're saying. That's more power than you're used to seeing from a second baseman, so that's kind of an interesting hedge. And in season, particularly in 15-team mix like labor or deeper, it is nice to have like that multi-positional eligibility if there's an injury. So yeah, it's something to look at. I wouldn't move Moustakas too much up on my boards as a result of that, but it's something nice.
Yeah, he's a pretty safe, medium floor, medium ceiling type of player. So very safe.
He's kind of underrated because of the power. He's almost, when he's healthy, he's almost an automatic 30 home run player. And I feel like people kind of discount him. And it's weird. They discount it because of real life and because the contracts haven't been there, which certainly isn't Moose's fault.
Yeah, he's always been actually a favorite of mine. And actually, in this transition to labor was that my first round pick was Nolan Arenado. So I wasn't targeting Moustakas in this one because I got my third baseman. But otherwise, yeah. I think Moustakas will probably be on a number of teams this year.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit. We'll kind of talk about your targeting positions and, you know, how that went for you, and we'll dive into that. But so the first thing I want to do is just kind of give our listeners, and, you know, most of them know, but I want to give them a little bit of a background on labor and the rules. And Zach, if I miss anything, you can certainly jump in, because I was listening to one or two other podcasts, and the podcasters were a little bit off on the format. So Labor Mix is a draft. It's been going. The mixed draft has been going since 2013. It's the newest of the labor leagues. Unlike Tout Wars, there is no auction. So this is the only mixed league. Probably the biggest difficulty is the draft is in the middle of February, and then you cannot make any moves right up until the first week or right before the first week of the season. So that's challenging, because, you know, if you have an injury or if there's a change, you know, Moustakas signing is a good example. You know, if you drafted a, you know, Castagnura, he went in the 24th round. That's not a big deal, but he might have gone later than that. There's a 6-player reserve. It's weekly moves. So, you know, unlike some leagues that are particularly mixed leagues that are more robust and there's daily moves or at least daily lineup changes, you can't really stream pitchers the way you might in, say, an ESPN league, where you can, you use a pitcher one day, send that pitcher back down, bring another pitcher up. And, you know, same thing with platoons on offense. It makes that a little bit more difficult. But unlike the labor-only leagues, there is some flexibility. You're not stuck, you know, taking someone. You know, I think, for example, Fernando Tatis went in the, I believe it was the 16th round. And, you know, it was the 16th round. And you're not stuck with Tatis on your active roster cutting him like you would be in labor NL, because he went in the active phase. So there is a little bit more flexibility. However, labor mix to me is challenging, because no zero fab like Tout Wars. It's 100 for the season, dollar minimum. So you can't run out of fab. The year that Brett and I, when we were doing it together, won in 2015, we ran out of fab, I believe, with about 8 weeks to go. And, you know, we were kind of sweating it out, because we're like, well, we got the players we wanted. We like our team. But if we have a rash of injuries, we're really out of luck, because we can't replace anybody. We're just stuck with our reserves or trades. And yes, there is trading. It's not like NFBC. You can't make trades during the season. So while having a balanced draft is good, you know, if you skip out on closers, for example, you're not necessarily going to be out of the saves game. You can make a trade. Did I miss anything, Zach? Is there anything else that you want to add as far as the rules or the wrinkles?
No, I think that's about it. It is a traditional 5x5 batting average league. So unlike Tout Wars, it uses batting average and not OBP. So
yeah, that's a good point too. It's 5x5 batting average and still wins. You know, no quality starts, still saves, not saves and holds or something else. So yeah, it's a fairly old school league. So let's start with your draft first. So, you know, we talked about this on the pre-show. You had the fifth overall pick, and you were targeting Nolan Arenado. That's who you were looking at there, and you got him. So, you know, we don't have to go into this too much, because, you know, we talked about it on the pre-show. But at that point, I assume, you know, the first four picks were Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Jose Ramirez, Christian Yelich. Were you surprised by those picks, or was that pretty much chalk?
Not really. I thought maybe Max Scherzer would go maybe at fourth instead of Yelich. But other than that, I think Scherzer went right after me, right at six. So other than that, it was pretty predictable.
Did you think about diverging with when Scherzer was on the board, or were you pretty much firm with Arenado?
No, I was pretty much firm, because I was planning on taking a starting pitcher in the second round, and I figured, you know, take the pitcher in the second round, the drop off from Scherzer to one of those guys isn't that drastic. So why I take Scherzer there and give up the opportunity to get an elite first round offensive player?
Yeah, so you know, that's kind of interesting. So it's the draft's a wheel. You know, or windshield wiper. So, you know, for your example, if you have the number one pick, like Joe Pisapia of the Fantasy Black Book does, he gets Mike Trout. He has to wait all the way to pick 30 overall, and that's a long time to wait for a player. You know, same thing with Paul Sporer and Jason Collette of Fangraphs. They had 15, 16, so it's nice that they get to bunch players together. But, you know, same kind of problem where you really have to wait and wait. You were at the five, so in the even rounds, there was a really long wait. And, you know, I know your strategy was to get a pitcher there. Who were the pitchers again that you were looking at in the second round or expecting might be there?
I was looking at well, the four that I wasn't sure whether I didn't think all of them were going to be there, but I thought some of them would. And that was Kluber, Verlander, Nola, and Cole. So as it turned out, Kluber and Verlander were taken in the earlier portion of the second round, and I had a choice between Nola and Cole. So I picked Cole. I think they're very similar in value. I think Cole had the slight edge just because I think his strikeout upside is a little bit higher. He struck out actually a lot more than Nola did last year. But I just like the strikeout advantage there. It is the American League versus the National League. That's one thing that maybe Nola has the advantage of. But overall, you know, it's really splitting hairs deciding between those two pitchers. So I went ahead and took Gerrit Cole. And through two rounds, it was pretty much as scripted with Arenado and then Cole.
Yeah, and you know, I like Cole a lot too, and for similar reasons. You know, we haven't gotten to starters yet or series, but you know, I actually have him ahead of Verlander, and I have him ahead of Nola. I believe I have Cole fourth or fifth overall, and it did go as scripted too with Kluber and Verlander, because I thought Kluber in particular like would be long gone by the time you picked, and sure enough, you know, he went 17th overall to Stefania Bell. So yeah, it was, you know, one of those things where I figured one of the pitchers would be there for you. I thought it'd be Cole or Nola. I actually thought Cole had the best chance of being there, and I thought that was a solid pick. The one thing, again, I want to ask you here. So I was surprised, you know, I asked you about Scherzer. I was surprised that Bryce Harper fell. Now, you know, we kind of know, you know, we talked about this coming in. We know that there's some uncertainty with him. He hasn't signed yet. You know, it's possible, especially if for example, he signed on March 15th. That he might not play the first couple weeks, or, you know, it might be rusty. Did you look at Harper falling and think, you know, like, I know I wanted Cole here, but maybe I'll take Harper and just wait for the pitcher in the third round?
I noticed it, but at the same time, you know, my plan going into the draft was I really wanted to avoid, you know, a situation where I'd be missing out on, say, that kind of top, I guess you call it the top 10 to 12 pitchers. It sort of ends with, like, Kershaw, Severino, Carrasco. I didn't want to be without any of those guys. And I thought by taking a hitter in the second round, it would be chancing not be getting shut out of those pitchers by my next turn in the third round. So I think that, you know, there's a big drop off after those guys. I didn't want to be in a situation where I had like Patrick Corbin as my ace. You know, he's a great number two, but not an ace in my mind. So that was the mindset I was in going into the draft, thinking that I really wanted that legitimate ace in the second round, and then come back and hopefully get, well, actually the original plan was to get an outfielder in the third round, but definitely get a hitter in that third round and go for the pitcher in the second round.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too, because on that part of the wheel, pitching went like four pitchers went between your second and third round pick. And, you know, again, I'm kind of looking, the person who jumps out in the third round. So what I like to do after every draft, especially with my own, but I did it with yours, you know, because we're going to talk about it tonight. I like to look at who ADP would have picked, you know, meaning if you just went in and simply took ADP and didn't use your own analysis, who you'd take. And you would have wound up with a team in the first three rounds of Max Scherzer, Bryce Harper, and Blake Snell. So, you know, it's kind of funny because that team, you wouldn't have taken a lot of other pitchers. And, you know, really, even if ADP didn't dictate it, if you drafted a team like that, you probably would have went hitter and maybe closer, but you would have went hitter like a lot, because you're at that point, you're like, well, I've got two aces. You know, I have the best pitcher in the game in Scherzer. I've got a pitcher who can strike out 300 players. So, you know, obviously you didn't go that way, but I do feel like if you had, or if somebody had, that's not necessarily a bad beginning. I know everybody looks at this differently, but I wouldn't mind beginning like that, particularly because in the middle and at the end, so many pitchers are the drop-off is real.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was out of character just to take a pitcher in the second round. So I definitely wouldn't have had two starting pitchers in the first three rounds. So that's probably unrealistic. But also, just getting back to Harper, I actually forgot to mention this, was, you know, Harper, he did bat 249 last year. And aside from the risk about, you know, is he on sign? Who's he going to sign with? Maybe he's going to get a late start to the, you know, spring training in the season. You know, he's coming off, you know, he had good counting stats last year, but batted 249. His average has been really fluctuating from year to year, so he hasn't really been a safe batting average guy. And, you know, as good as he is, you know, I think that in a way, you know, I think his reputation is a little bit higher than what actually the actual production that he's put on the board so far in the last few years. And, you know, other than his MVP season, you know, he's really been more of a, you know, maybe a second round player than a first round player. And I think just the assumption is that, oh, he's going to put up, you know, top 10 type numbers. But in reality, you know, he's not. I think he's just slightly overrated from a fantasy perspective.
I mean, I agree. I have him ranked, I believe, 15 or 16. Yeah. And some of that's admittedly uncertainty, because if he goes to San Diego with that lineup and that park, I would knock him down from that. If he goes to the Phillies with that park and that lineup, I'd probably move up a couple spots. So I know what you're saying. There's something to that. You know, I guess what I'm saying is, if you had like this, if you were in the first part of the second round and it was 17 or 18 and there were some players who fell, you know, I might be like, well, okay, like I can see why you didn't take Harper. I'm just looking at 26 and I'm thinking, you know, even with everything you said, you're still at the back end of the second round, and you're kind of closing in. Like the downside to Harper for me in terms of what he would do is probably like fourth round. And there's a pretty solid floor there. And, you know, also you had Arenado, who, you know, he is, you know, he's not a 320 hitter. He's not Altuve, but he is a pretty good average bet.
Yeah. I mean, the major reason was basically, I definitely thought that I'd be shut out of any of those top 10 to 12 pitchers. And as it turned out, you know, I would have been able to get Carrasco if I took Harper in the second. Carrasco got taken right after me in the third. So, and, you know, in hindsight, oh, maybe taking Harper there would have been okay. Would have been, you know, a better route to take. But the other way I look at it is, you know, what duo would you rather have? Would you rather have, I ended up taking Rizzo in the third. So would you rather have, you know, Cole and Rizzo, or would you rather have Carrasco and Harper? And, you know, if we make that kind of comparison, I think I might rather have the Cole Rizzo duo. So that's another way to look at it.
You know, and a lot of that probably, you jump to Rizzo. A lot of that probably depends on how you feel about Rizzo.
Yeah.
I suspect you're a little higher on him than I am. And I don't, and there's two things. One, I think you're higher on Rizzo. Two, and we'll get into this conversation a little bit. So, and we talked about this in the pre-show. I'm very much a value player, particularly in the first, I'd say, 10 rounds of a draft, where I want to take the player who I believe is the best player on the board. It sounded to me, and looking at your draft, and we'll go through this, in the first, like, I'd say at least 9 rounds, you very much were like, well, I want to get this player, I want to get this position, I want to fill this slot. Is that correct or accurate?
I would say for the first few rounds, yeah. And then it got kind of to the best available player thing. But what happened was that, you know, I really, like the third round, I wasn't anticipating taking Rizzo. I was hoping that Starling Marte would fall to me. So yeah, for the early rounds, I guess I was kind of thinking more towards a, you know, maybe not a position standpoint, but more of a category standpoint of being able to, you know, as best as I could fill out as many categories as I can, you know, before the talent level just drops off significantly.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Rizzo's solid. I have nothing against Rizzo. And, you know, we've talked about this. I do believe that first base. So Paul Goldschmidt went 16. Freddie Freeman went to Steve Gardner, a friend of the show at USA Today Sports, in the second round. First base really does, you know, kind of fall off. And
yeah.
You know, I look at some of the players who went after, you know, usually there's a glut of first basemen. Joey Votto goes to the fourth round. And honestly, he, you know, this isn't on base league, as you pointed out. On an on base league, I've got no problem with him there. That's a good pick. In an average league, you know, it's kind of, you know, Matt Carpenter's probably going to wind up at third. You know, Matt Olson in the sixth. I like Olson, but that feels like a stretch for me. So I think the Rizzo pick, the more I look at it, is solid. And you would have probably been in a position, if you didn't take Rizzo, where you would have probably looked at first base and said, yeah, you know what, I'm going to go weaker here or later and just hope I get some decent players like in the mid rounds.
Yeah. Or even just maybe reach for someone like a Jose Abreu, maybe a round before, you know, he should really be taken. So,
yeah.
I mean, looking at the third round, let's see. So I took Rizzo. The other hitters that were taken after him were, I guess, Benintendi, Soto, Rendon, Chris Davis, Bellinger, Pham. So, you know, you could say that, but at the same time, if I look at, you know, the hitters who were taken in that round, I don't really mind just going with Rizzo there.
To me, that's a similar group. You might have, you know, depending have them ranked, you might have Benintendi ahead of Rizzo, you might have Rendon ahead of Rizzo. I don't because I'm cautious with sophomores, but you might have Soto ahead of him. But I don't look at any of those hitters like, oh, yeah, like that's way ahead. And the other thing I want to mention before we get to your fourth pick, you know, regardless of what you did with Cole there, you were right to take a pitcher in one of these rounds because really I look at the pitchers who went after the, you know, your pick of Rizzo, and they really started flying off the board in a couple of cases, like Jameson Taillon, who I really like. To me, that was an aggressive pick in the third round by Andrew Lamont.
Yeah, that was very early. And yeah, just in general, starting pitchers are going off the board really quickly. So yeah, I was glad looking back. I was glad I went with Cole. I could have went with Carrasco, you know, and then taking the hitter second round. But, you know, it's just hard to, you know, what do they say? Hindsight is 20/20. So you can't really look back and say, woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, that's just how it turned out.
So it looks like, in the fourth round, you know, because you missed out on Marte,
right?
It looks like you went for speed here with this pick. So let's let the listeners know what you did there in the fourth.
So I missed out on Marte in the third, and then to compound that, I missed out on Kane with the pick right before me in the fourth. So I was all set to take Kane to get the speed and to get that outfielder because I didn't draft an outfielder yet. And then lo and behold, Kane gets taken with the pick right before me. So I went ahead and I took Segura. It's probably a reach by about maybe a half a round, you know, in terms of just, you know, ADP and what, you know, in terms of value of other players. But I was looking for, you know, that combination of the batting average and the speed. And Segura really fit that mold. Going into the draft, I was really wanted two of Marte, Kane, and Segura. So I landed up just getting one, but I thought that was the, you know, the appropriate pick to make at that point. The one thing that ended up happening that I'm going to keep this in mind in my future drafts is, you know, shortstop is a very deep position, and be careful not to overload yourself with middle infielders in the beginning of drafts. And so sort of what happened to me was I took Segura really early. And then I took a middle infielder. And then by that time, there were a lot of really late middle infielders that were taken, specifically shortstops that I'm actually very I'm hopeful about that I wasn't able to get just because I filled up those middle infielder spots pretty early.
Yeah, you know, the one player jumped out at me who gets no respect every year is Marcus Semien. I was really surprised to see like Semien kind of just fall and fall, you know, not great, but not a great player, but, you know, 18th round, it's kind of like, yeah. Now, one other thing about labor though, is you can draft someone and then put them on reserve. You know, you don't want to do it too early, but, you know, to your point, you know, if you have two shortstops early, you could take an 18th or 19th round pick and go, well, you know what, I'm going to stash this player and, you know, maybe make a trade later. Or if there's an injury, I've got a pretty strong replacement.
Right. So I like, you know, Segura, I like Segura a lot this year. We've talked about him in the past. So I was fine with that pick, even though it might have been a little bit of a reach. But yeah, so through four rounds, I was okay with the team I assembled. I would have loved to have, you know, one of Marte or Kane, but at least I got the one of the three I wanted.
Yeah, I think your big reach based on ADP was your next pick in Justin Upton. Now, some of that, in my opinion, I'm a big fan of Upton. I have him about ranked here. That to me is a solid pick. And Upton, for some reason, is another player kind of underrated. Like, so his ADP right now is 96. And that feels low to me. Like, it just feels low for a hitter. Yes, the average is low. And yes, he's not going to steal you a ton of bases, although he'll get a few even in the bad year. But Upton just one of those players who kind of goes out and fills out the box score. You know, 30 home runs or more the last three seasons, you know, even playing in a tough park, drives and runs, you know, scores runs. So did you feel bad for reaching for Upton, or was your thinking kind of like mine? Like, you know what? He's a solid player, and I'm just going to take the player I believe is solid here and not worry about the ADP.
Yeah, he's always been a personal favorite of mine for that very reason, just very consistent and very underrated. So I'm not sure if I would have – well, I took him in the early portion of the fifth round. I don't think he would have been there for me in the sixth round. So at that point, I was without any outfielders. So I needed my first outfielder. There's, you know, five outfielders to fill. I was getting a little nervous. So I really was focused on an outfielder there. The choices were Upton or George Springer. Actually, and Springer was taken a few picks after Upton, And, you know, Springer's a guy who I think he's a little bit like overrated in terms of, you know, just in terms of ADP and draft so far. He was taken late fifth round here, which I think is appropriate. But then again, you see a lot of these drafts that he's being taken a little bit earlier than that. So Springer, you know, Springer to me seemed like a, you know, a decent pick, but I liked Upton's power upside a little more. And Upton was just a little bit more, you know, established from a track record standpoint.
Yeah, a little bit older. And, you know, I'm kind of looking at some of the outfielders. So right after Yasiel Puig, who everybody loves, I feel like that was a bit of a reach, in my opinion. I mean, no offense to, you know, Ryan Bloomfield of Baseball HQ, who I like, and I actually thought overall had a very good draft. Just that pick specifically, I was kind of on. You know, Victor Robles, you know, we could do a whole side podcast about Rudy Gamble's draft. I really liked it. I kind of like how Rudy paired like risk and upside with like stability in his draft. But Robles is if you take him at that point, you're definitely, you know, looking at the higher end. You know, Mitch Haniger, you know, after Upton, you do kind of fall off into the you know, seventh round there. Mitch Haniger, AJ Pollock, Eddie Rosario. There's definitely a drop off. The funny thing is that the outfielders I would probably be looking at would be like Malik Smith, Nick Castellanos, and really, to your point, if you hadn't taken Upton, he might not have been there for you. And it is a little tough to go, you know, through a draft with like no outfielders and think, gee, am I even gonna get one of them here?
That was a little bit scary for me. So I just had to take an outfielder. I don't like to draft, you know, really to the book in terms of positions, but that was right. That was an extreme case where I very rarely come in a draft and I'm without any outfielder through, you know, through four rounds.
So here's a pick where I think we'll have the most disagreement on in terms of, or it'll be up there. So in the sixth round, you took Madison Bumgarner. And I'm guessing what you're thinking was here, again, was that, well, I've got one starter. I don't want to wait too long to pull for a second. You know, it's not like I have Scherzer, who, you know, is like so solid and, you know, not only solid in performance, but a safe bet or close to a safe bet for 300 strikeouts and 20 innings and probably a fair amount of wins, you know, not to mention the good ratios. So what's your thinking with Bumgarner? Are you assuming a bounce back to most or all of vintage Bumgarner, or do you recognize it's a roll of the dice?
I really don't know what to expect, and I do recognize it's a roll of the dice, and to me it's a kind of a little bit out of character for me, but at that point, you know, late sixth round, I figured, you know, there's really not a whole lot of downside in taking him as my number two starter. Of course, if he's your ace, that's the reason to be a little bit concerned. But, you know, as a number two starter, late sixth round, I wasn't in love with a lot of the hitters who were available there. So I said, you know what, let's just go ahead and take Bumgarner. You know, maybe he's not going to be an elite pitcher anymore, but if you could give me, you know, 3.5 ERA, maybe 175 strikeouts, that's fine. So, you know, it was a little bit, I know that everyone's kind of just scared to even touch him. So I said, you know what, let's just go ahead and do it and see what happens.
Yeah, this is just a case for me where, like, you know, Charlie Morton, I'm a big Charlie Morton fan. Morton went two rounds later. Like, I'm a fan. I like Morton better than Bumgarner. I like Foltynewicz, who went two picks later, better than Bumgarner. He went to Dr. Roto. I like Kyle Hendricks a little bit better than Bumgarner, because Bumgarner's never been a big strikeout pitcher. You know, neither is Hendricks, and Hendricks went four rounds later. So, yeah, I'm just like, Bumgarner doesn't do it for me. And this is probably the example of why I like to pick value. And I'm not knocking you, Zach. It's just kind of my philosophy, I think, where I'd almost rather wait and like see what kind of falls, particularly if I already had the pitcher in Cole. But again, you know, we all do things differently. And it sounds like you were going to take the starter here pretty much no matter what.
I might have taken a hitter there, but I didn't see, you know, I didn't see really any hitter that jumped off the page at that point. Well, I thought that I couldn't maybe get in a later round.
Well, that's a good segue because, again, going off the ADP list, I want to talk about this player a little bit and, you know, philosophy here. The player who ADP would have had you take here is Gary Sanchez. Now, it's kind of interesting because Sanchez really fell. I know there's some people who are down on him and are kind of scared and, you know, worried that last year is more of what to expect than next year. But, you know, he fell into the middle-ish back end of the seventh round, you know, I believe it's a Jeff Erickson or RotoWire, and kind of to the point where I don't want to call him a bargain. There's certainly some risk, but there's also a chance of 25 to 30 home runs from a catcher.
Yeah, that could turn out to be a great pick. My, you know, general feeling with, you know, catchers is it's just, even though that was a pretty good price for Sanchez, it's just spending a decent, you know, a decent round value pick on a catcher is just a very risky investment. And I did like a lot. There were catchers. I actually landed up with Wellington Castillo, I believe, in the 14th rounds. There were catchers who in that, you know, sort of back end of the top 12 who I was really targeting, and I liked their prices a little bit better. So that's why I kind of, that's why I avoided Sanchez, just because of the position situation and how I did like a bunch of those catchers who are just going to be more of a mid-round value picks.
Yeah, my only thing there is like JT Realmuto, for example, went in the fourth round. And to me, that's even moving to Philly, that's aggressive. My one thing with catchers in a two-catcher format and, you know, 15 teams, everybody has to have, you know, or you have 30 total catchers. You do have the opportunity, depending on where somebody falls, you know, if everything clicks, they have it's a bargain. And Sanchez probably, is it safe to say he has more upside than any other catcher? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, considering that draft position, seventh round, I mean, he's the year before, what was he, maybe a third round pick? So that's
he was a second round pick, because I remember in TGFBI, and I'm glad I didn't, although I didn't do much better with Josh Donaldson, but I was sitting there and he was falling and falling, and I'm like, ooh, I really am tempted. And yeah. I did. And the last point I'll make about Sanchez before we move off of this is that, you know, according to the PFM in 15 team mixed, he earns $7. It's not great, but because of scarcity, he was a positive earner. I think that's sort of the thing that gets missed a little bit, is that there's the floor is higher than people realize because of the scarcity. And I'm not saying, you know, I get it, Zach. Like, I do get the idea that, like, if Sanchez went in the fourth or even the fifth, I might be like, yeah, like, that. I do see that if he, you know, gives you what he gave you last year, or maybe he's only slightly better, that's a big loss. It's not as much of a loss, though, as some people think, at least, you know, not based on the PFM and the other pricing models. So your next pick, it looks like you took a closer. So you took a pitcher who I've really liked in the past, who was on our Labor NL team last year, in Brad Hand.
Yeah, so at that point, I really wanted to get, you know, a very reliable closer. It didn't have to be a top, you know, top five closer or whatever, but it had to be someone who had the mixture of, you know, talent and job security. And to me, you know, Han was the guy there. Chapman got taken right before me. Osuna got taken a few picks before me. I'm not sure if I would have taken Chapman over Han, but I would have taken Osuna over Han. So at that stage, I was thinking that, you know, if I waited on a closer another round, it was going to be a run and no one was going to be available. No, say top 10, top 12 guy was going to be right. Available by the time I picked in round eight. So that's why I went with Hand.
So let's again back up a little bit, because the ADP pick in the fifth round would have been Edwin Diaz. So philosophically, you talked about this with Sanchez. Are you also against, like, picking a closer that early, or is it situational for you?
I think it's situational. I think in the past I used to be really into taking closers, like even as early as the fourth or fifth round. But those were the days where you had, you know, Rivera and, you know, Jansen was just dominant then. So I've kind of altered my approach a little bit, but I still think it's important to get, you know, one very reliable closer. So, I mean, I would have been open to taking a closer earlier, but just the way the player pool is this year with sort of the increased importance of that top tier starting pitching, I was glad that I was still able to get Hand, you know, in the seventh.
Well, and again, it's interesting because, you know, we've talked about ADP. So if you took an ADP, as I'm calling it, neutral team, your first five rounds would have been Scherzer, Snell, and Diaz, Harper, who we mentioned, and Bogarts, which certainly a great pitching start. I feel like with that kind of draft, I know some people disagree. I feel like taking three pitchers in the first five rounds, and particularly a closer, is a little much. And, you know, it's funny because ESPN, the ESPN entrant, which was Stefania Bell, although she wasn't there, I think somebody else was running her draft. But
yeah, someone else from ESPN, some search guy or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I've heard him on their podcast. But that entrant took Corey Kluber, Patrick Corbin, and Edwin Diaz in, you know, three of the first five rounds. And, you know, it is kind of funny because I look at that team and I'm like, well, the pitching's really good, but I do feel like the offense is kind of light for this sort of league. And that's sort of the risk with, being doctrinaire and simply looking at ADP and saying, well, I'm going to go by ADP. I don't care what my team looks like. I can share with you later, Zach, like the offense on your team would have been a little rough and a little thin and risky on the back end. So eighth round, it looks like you got more speed. And you went with somebody I'm okay with. I've never been a big fan, but I think the value here is fine, and Ender Inciarte.
Yeah, I'm not in love with that pick. If I had to pick, one pick who I'm not really that excited about would be him. But this is really a category need pick, and combination of category need and position need pick, more than any other pick I made. At that point, I had only one outfielder, and my speed was I basically just had Segura as my only 20 stolen base guy. So I went with Inciarte. I'm a little worried that, the Braves are talking about batting Acuna, leadoff, and Inciarte might be lower in the order. So that could hurt his stolen bases and his runs. But so I'm hoping that he bats high in the order. The other thing that's concerning is that, he stole 28 bases last year, but 13 of them were in April. So he only stole 15 for the final 5 months of the season. So I'm a little worried about that. But hopefully, he could at least do what he did last year, maybe just, 20 to 25 steals. Hit for a decent average, and maybe he's not a second outfielder, maybe he's more of a third outfielder, but as long as he gives me the stats I'm looking for there, I'm okay with it. I'm not sure if he would have been around. I may have been able to wait at least a round or two for him, but at that point it was really just a really dire category need situation.
It falls off fast, and like somebody I know, there's no snowball's chance and, HE double hockey sticks, you'd take him. Billy Hamilton was, foul this year from previous years, the 11th round. But we know from, talking on the podcast, he's not your type of player. And interestingly enough, this was, again, Andrea Lamont, Roto Lady. She also took Byron Buxton in the 14th round. And, those are two players with a lot of upside. But really, unless the power is there for Buxton or any semblance of power, that's a lot of speed wrapped up in two players where you're not necessarily getting much of anything else.
Yeah, so I want, Inciarte, he also has a little bit of a power upside. He can maybe hit double-digit homer. So there's something to like about him. But, in general, it was a path that I would have preferred not to take, having to, get him in the eighth as opposed to maybe taking someone like a Kane in the fourth or a Marte in the third. So it just went a little bit off of my original plan.
Yeah, so we're going to do two more rounds like this, and then we're going to kind of do more of a macro, because otherwise this would be like a 2.5 to 3 hour podcast, and I think that might make Jen a little sad. So, and our listeners too. So let's talk about two more. So you took a second closer in the ninth, and so there's two sides to this. The one side is that I don't necessarily like taking two closers, particularly this early, because I feel like you're kind of losing out on value on offense or something else. But the other side of this is that closers really fall off. And I'd say there are at least a third of teams that either don't have they have a shaky closer, or they're not even going with a traditional closer and you don't know who's going to close. So I love the skills with the eights for sure. And I love the numbers. That would be the only potential downside for me is that you might have, not you, but if you take two closers this early, you might be missing out on some offense or some other stats.
Yeah, I can see that. But at the same time, so let's see. So guys who were taken right after Kirby Yates were Tanaka, Matt Chapman, Justin Turner, Grandal. So a bunch of pretty solid starting pitchers. Odor at second base, but he's someone who I was a little bit, the batting average really scared me. So at that point, I could have, the other guy who I really like as a second closer is Cody Allen. So he was someone who I was targeting, but I didn't know exactly when he was going to be taken. He landed up being taken in the 12th round, towards the beginning of the 12th round. So maybe looking back, I could have taken someone else there in the ninth and waited and got Yates. It would have had to be in the 11th. So gotten Allen in the 11th. So that would have been another route. But in terms of just Yates, I like the player and I like the job situation. So I can't really complain about that pick. But you could also look back and say, I could have gotten this hitter, this pitcher, and then maybe gone with a Cody Allen instead.
So you raised that. I was going to bring this up later at the end, but I want to bring it up now since you mentioned this. So you mentioned this in your article. You said that you were a little not surprised, but since you're used to expert auctions, that this was a draft, and because it was an expert draft and not a home league, it was kind of tougher sledding because players that might have been there for you in a softer league or a home league weren't there. And there were a couple situations where you felt like, oh man, I can't believe, like, not only how quickly this is going, but how some of the players I want, like, just aren't there for me.
Yeah, it did throw me off a little bit. And this is the first real industry snake draft league that I've been in. And being in Tout Wars auction for all these years, it's maybe you'll end up overpaying for someone you really want, but at least you'll get the guy you want, as long as you don't overpay by a tremendous amount. But if you're targeting a guy, it's okay, I'm willing to spend a dollar or two more than anyone else, that's fine, and you'll end up getting him. In this case, it's like you missed out. This happened to me twice in the first four rounds with Marte and Kane, where you missed out on a guy by one or two picks. That's it. You can't get him. So that's what made the snake draft challenging for me.
The auctions, something I like about auctions is you can fight with somebody over a player and use your dollars and make them pay. And there's a game of chicken. This is all just a matter of, who's this person going to take, and there's not really much you can do. Like there's nothing you can do. You just have to wait and hope the player or players you want are in the slot you want, and just do your best. So I like your pick in the 10th round. I feel like he fell. I know the risk. I know our colleague Rob Silver, absolutely hates this player. but Tim Anderson, especially because it's not an OBP league, as we mentioned a few times, really a great chance there, for 2020, and the average shouldn't kill you.
Yeah, that was my thinking. I was a little up, still light in speed. I already had a shortstop, but I didn't really mind at that point, just because Anderson, gives you the speed without sacrificing your power. And like you said, in Tout, in an OBP league, I'd be scared to draft him completely. But in an average league, he hit, I believe he only hit 240 last year, but I think the year before he hit something like 257, over 250. So if you could just do that again and not be a detriment in average while giving me that, close to 2020, I might be fine with that pick.
Yeah, the funny thing too about Anderson as a player, his walk rate, it's still not good, but it went from 2% in 2017 to 5% last year. So there's a little hope for Anderson. The other thing about Anderson, he's a solid defensive player. Our metrics at BP rank him higher than elsewhere, but even other metrics are positive. So barring a complete collapse with the bat, he's going to play. He's going to keep the job. And again, I really like that 2020 potential, and he has enough speed that there's even potential for more. So yeah, I like that pick. So like I said, this would be a 3-hour podcast if we went through every one of these. We're not going to do that. So what I want to do, I'm going to rattle off your next 10 rounds, and you can talk, or we can talk kind of about your overall arching strategy, or maybe a couple players. So 11 through 19. Jose Quintana in the 11th, Hunter Renfroe in the 12th, Asdrubal Cabrera in the 13th, Wellington Castillo, who you mentioned before, in the 14th, Zach Godley in the 15th, Peter Alonso in the 16th, Shin-Soo Choo in the 17th, Julio Teheran in the 18th, and Manuel Margot in the 19th. So it's really up to you, Zach. Do you want to talk about kind of your overarching draft, or do you want to talk about a specific player or players?
I just wanted to really, in those rounds, to just, fill in positional needs. Quintana is someone who I think, he was probably a little bit overrated last year. Heading into the season last year, really rated as maybe even a low-end ace. But this year, I think he's actually, people talk about a, skills decline and a velocity decline and, strikeout rate decline. But I think, he's valued right now. You could get him. You could legitimately get him. And this is where I got him, as a low end number three starter in a deep mixed league. So I thought that he was a nice value there. I'm in the, what was that, in the 11th round. The one thing I look back on with that pick is that I actually could have taken, I had my eye on Cesar Hernandez for a while, and I almost took him in the 11th round there instead of Quintana, but I wanted to build out the pitching staff. And as it turned out, Hernandez got taken the pick before me the following round. So there's a chance that I would have been able to get Hernandez in the next round. And that kind of led to me being a little bit weak at second base with Cabrera, who I like, but I think he's more of a, I'm not so sure about him as a, every week starting second baseman. Although I do like his flexibility.
Yeah, the Cabrera pick felt like a bit of a stretch for me based on his value. Which is funny because Cabrera's ADP is too low. Like, he should be going higher, but this puts him, I think, within the top 200 of the labor draft. And I felt that was a little aggressive. But again, it's in a vacuum, you can look at ADP and look at a player and go, Zach screwed up, that's too high. But really, it's second base, you know, after Cabrera, and I'm looking at some of the players who were taken, really drops off considerably. It almost feels like Cabrera was one of the last decent second basemen at all. And if you skipped Cabrera, you really would have had went from being disappointed to having a real problem.
Yeah, there was a steep downturn after that. And, you know, I probably would have taken Hernandez instead of Renfro there in the round before if he was available. So, but as it turned out, you know, I was still a little bit short in outfielders. So that's why I took Renfro. Renfro just, you know, quickly, he's young, he has power upside. Hopefully he won't kill my batting average too much. So I'm fine with that. And like I said, with Cabrera, you know, he could play second base, shortstop, third base. So I like that. I love that position versatility. So that's why I went with him.
And I something about your team between, you know, with Arenado, with Segura, I even believe, and I have to, you know, look, you know, so you do have some players who are a little risky in batting average. But Arenado and Segura, and even Rizzo last 3 years, you know, 283, 273, 292. He's not an anchor, but, you know, given the league average, he's above average. You have a decent enough base that you could take a hitter like Renfro and be like, you know what, like he might hurt, but there's too much potential there not to go for it.
Yeah, I usually draft like a very bad batting average team, just like without him even being aware of it. But this time I really tried to make a conscious effort not to fall too behind in batting average and, you know, get a few of those anchors so that I could take someone like a Renfro. So, you know, I think I did a good enough job with that where I could at least be competitive in average, be in the middle of the pack while being, strong in power and maybe a little weak in speed. But, we could address that during the season, hopefully.
Yeah, and I like the second half of like 15 to 20 or 16 to 19. I like the combination on the hitters of Alonso, Chu, and Margot. So you get a solid vet in Chu who somehow is just underrated every year. He did fall off in the second half. Alonso, who, you know, is a roll of the dice, but is okay there. And Margot, I like players the year after where they fall off and everybody writes them off. Margot could address your speed issue quite easily if he even lives up to, you know, say 75% of his potential.
Yeah, that's what my thinking was with him. There's a little bit of a playing time risk with him just because the Padres outfield is so crowded. But I think that he's going to, you know, end up getting a pretty close to everyday playing time. And, you know, in the minor leagues, it's funny. He was a huge base stealer in the minor leagues. I believe he stole 30 bases maybe his last full season in the minors. So it's been a little disappointing. It's a little disappointing, his stolen base output so far in the majors. So, you know, I'm thinking if he has a good year, you know, if he could even just get, you know, 15-15 with a decent enough batting average, that pick is going to be worth it. If he gives me 20 steals, you know, that in itself might solve my stolen base problem. So hopefully that's what's going to happen.
So the other side of this, you know, the one thing with your team that worries me, perhaps, I don't know if it's more than worries you, but is the pitching. So I do like Godley. I think he's a good, nice bounce back candidate. You know, Teron's okay. He's appropriate there. It's not that these two pitchers are bad. It's just that with the staff that you have, I think Bumgarner is really key. Like Bumgarner is going to have to bounce back to being like an ace or near ace for your team to have a shot. You know, I know you can pick pitchers up, but you know, we've talked about this. Starting pitching is thinner. Teams aren't going as deep. So if Bumgarner is mediocre and kind of does what he's done, you might have a struggle regardless of what these pitchers behind them do.
Yeah, I would have liked to kind of have one, you know, every pitcher kind of move down a notch in my rotation, and I'm just like one pitcher, one, say, number two pitcher, you know, short, I'm in a way. But, you know, like you said, I could, you know, could use the waiver wire in season. And also, you know, just the pace at which the starting pitchers flew off the board, you know, this year was a little bit, I was expecting it, but it was a little bit surprising nonetheless. So, you know, maybe I could have went ahead and taken a pitcher, you know, maybe taken a starting pitcher instead of one of those closers. But, you know, then again, I'd rather be strong in the bullpen and not have to, you know, go fishing for, especially like you mentioned in the beginning, you know, the $100 fab limit, you know, for the season actually makes getting a closer, you know, two reliable closers a little bit more important, because you can't just, you know, throw, you know, $1 here, $1 there at potential save sources.
Yeah, I you know, the tough thing about that's one thing. I mean, another thing too is like the year that Brett and I won, you know, I mentioned this before, we picked up Jason Grilly, but that was just a weird situation where, you know, Craig Kimbrell got traded and a closer opened up. that could happen. Like there are a lot of situations in flux. There could be someone not drafted who winds up as the closer. There could be a big fab bidding war. But first of all, you just don't know. And then B, you could spend 50 on somebody your first week. They lose a job or never even get the job, and you're out half your fab for almost nothing. So yeah, there is something in a league like this strategically to grabbing two closers. Whereas in Tout Wars, because of the $0 fab and the $1,000 cap, it's very different. Like you can kind of play the late closer game there. I feel like here it's important to get at least one closer. And it's funny because I think Brett disagrees with me on this. And getting two can offer an advantage. Of course, closers being what they are, if Hand and Yates both lose a job, I'm not going to be shocked. I'd certainly be surprised. So rest of your draft, 20 to 29. This is a six reserve draft. So Mitch Garver was your second catcher. Brandon Belt, who looked like insurance for Alonso. Adam Ottavino, I really like pitchers like this who are, you know, the relief and kind of the arm that you can use, bounce back and forth. Michael Wacha, Ian Kinsler, Anibal Sanchez, who I love. I feel like it's great that you got him there. Dustin Fowler, Joe Ross, Willie Calhoun, and CC Sabathia. So I feel like you close out strong. This is a solid group, and it's a good. I like that you got all these starting pitchers. Labor gives you an opportunity to play matchups and to stream. And because your rotation, you know, after Cole isn't necessarily like Studley, it gives you that chance to move pitchers in and out. You hope some of these players work out. I also like the hitters you got, though. Kinsler, he's being written off, but who knows when Tatis will be up. Fowler was completely forgotten and could come back. And Calhoun came into camp in great shape, apparently, and could work his way into some at-bats. So anyone here that you really like, or is there anyone here that you feel like, eh, you know, I wish I had taken somebody else looking back at this almost a week later?
Well, like you said, Ottavino, I like, just as the ERA whip stabilizer. I actually thought of taking Britton there instead of Ottavino, just because I think maybe Britton is closer to saves than Ottavino would be. But in the end, I really just was focused on the ratios.
Britton's DRA has been terrible the last 2 years. I mean,
From a ratio standpoint, I just preferred Ottavino. He was just the safer play. And, you know, like you mentioned, you know, I was trying to just, you know, draft a bunch of starting pitchers and hope that, you know, one or two of them just, you know, turn out to be, you know, weekly starter worthy. So hopefully, you know, one of either, say, Wacha, Anibal Sanchez, and maybe even Sabathia, you know, could be someone who I just, you know, play based on the matchups on a weekly basis. So I'll probably be, you know, looking for starting pitching early in the season if, say, you know, Bumgarner is very disappointing and the rest of my staff is a little bit disappointing. But I figure that, you know, taking a chance on all those starting pitchers, just quantity, you know, but just by chance that one or two of them will work out. So that was my thinking with the pitching. And I also really like, I actually really like the Dustin Fowler pick, because he's also someone who's sort of that post-type sleeper mold, where I remember there was a lot of hype about him heading into the season last year. And, you know, he's someone, he needs to win the job, but if he does, you know, he's someone who could definitely has, you know, dark horse, you know, 2020 potential in the 29th round, that's 28th round. That would be nice.
Yeah, I think he'll start at the minors, but again, even if he comes up, you know, in May or June, and at that point, it doesn't matter. You know, the thing about the reserve round is because of the way labor mix is a little bit more flexible than NL and AL, some of these players won't be on your team in a couple months. Like that's just the way it works. Like you'll cycle through, there'll be injuries or there'll be ineffectiveness, and chances are good that you'll be cycling through at least half of these players.
Yeah, Joe Ross actually already, they're saying that he's not going to start the season in the rotations. He might actually be my first drop, so we'll see what happens with that. And there actually are a few waiver wire, interesting waiver wire guys that might be upgrades over some of the bench players I have. So, but that'll be something to look at over the next, the next 5 weeks. I'll have to just be staring at that waiver wire, thinking about what bids I'm going to make.
So couple questions before we close. So first of all, you're looking at your team on the whole. You know, I know the obligatory thing is to say I like my team, but how do you feel? Do you feel like you have the best team? Do you feel like it's competitive, or do you feel like I could have done better?
I like the team. I don't love it. I mean, I think I could be competitive. I rarely come out of a draft saying, "Oh, my team is the greatest thing." It's just how I exit drafts all the time. But I think the power is very strong, and I think, you know, the bullpen is strong. But I think, like you meant, we're talking about beyond, Cole, the pitching could be shaky. And the speed, I think, could be competitive and would be very good if someone like a Margot, could steal 20, and maybe Fowler could be an impact player there. So I think, so at all, power good, starting pitching maybe a little shaky, bullpen very good, and the speed maybe at least middle of the pack.
So my other question for you, I know this is difficult because, we're overwhelmed. We don't really look at this, but is there a team or teams that you like? Like, is there somebody's draft that you looked at and thought, wow, I really like what this person did. I like their approach, or I like the way they managed it.
Well, I guess Ryan Bloomfield I like a lot just because he was picking right before me all the time and stealing all my players. So I think that would be a good start. He got Kane. He got a bunch of other players. Cesar Hernandez. He got a few players who were on my radar. So I liked his team. I don't know how seriously you pay attention to those projection models after coming out of the draft.
I really don't.
I think I don't know. I don't even know who was projected. I think actually Spoerer Collette, who I like their team. I think they were projected for last on like Fantasy Pros projections. So that was a
I
surprise.
believe that Fantasy Fix,
Yeah, he was first. He was projected first.
Alan Harrison, who I've actually met. Alan's, we went to a Mets game together. He's really nice. But yeah, his team was projected first. But yeah, these projections are kind of, I don't want to say they're garbage, but the projections are kind of almost always the kiss of death, I joke, because things go wrong, like things are unpredictable. One weird thing about Alan's team is he took two DHs. He took Chris Davis and Shohei Ohtani, and the rules of labor is you can do that, you can draft as much of anything as you want, but he can't use either one of them, or he can't use both of them until one of them is eligible at outfield. Maybe what he's hoping is that Davis plays, I think it's 5 games in labor, plays 5 games in the outfield, and Ohtani, comes back in May, and he's got Ohtani and he's got Davis. But that the projections don't account for things like that, is what I'm saying. So I think another reason he projects highly is he has a lot of veterans, and most systems tend to project them very well. Whereas for someone like Vlad Guerrero Jr., I'm guessing that you saw Guerrero in the fourth and were like, better Spoerer and Collette than me. You don't like that kind of pick. But that's Guerrero in the fourth at that slot, like, seems okay to me. It kind of seems like, well,
Not
like,
bad.
yeah, it's not bad. Like, he there's some downside. There's downside with any rookie, but that's low enough where there's some upside too. So yeah, we'll see. I don't put too much stock in the projections just because a lot can happen. Things can change. I think there's one league ever where I've seen the person projected to win, especially an expert league where people are making, moves all year, and there's a lot of aggressiveness. I think, it's funny, your old colleague, Fred Zinke, used to be in this league, and it looks like he's not here anymore. So Fred was somebody where you could throw the projections out the window, because, as you know, Fred's a great trader. Like, Fred would always come out with, like, I'd say, like a fifth or sixth place team, and even Fred would admit that, but he'd trade himself into a top, like, a first, second, or third place team. And that's the other thing with these leagues. With the trading, you never know. I do you feel comfortable, Zach, that you'll be able to trade in this league?
I hope so. I mean, it's a new group of people from actually, well, there are a lot of similar people that I'm in with other leagues, but it is a group as a whole is new to me. So hopefully, it'll be an easy league to trade in. My Towers League has been a pretty easy league to trade in. And I also know that the NL Labor League that I was in last year that you're going to be in this year was a little bit difficult to trade in. So it really depends on the mix up. So yeah, that would be something for you to look forward to. So it really depends on the mix of owners. So yeah, hopefully it's going to be a good. Hopefully it's going to be an active trading league because it's going to be, trading. I mentioned in my article, maybe making an infielder for outfielder trade is going to be something that I'm going to have to do early in the season if none of my if my back end outfielders don't really pan out. So we'll see about that.
Anything else before we close?
No, I think that's it. I mean, it's going to be like you said, challenging to sit at my desk and stare at this roster for 6 weeks. So hopefully I can't wait for the season to start soon enough.
Yeah, or do what I'm doing and have like five or six drafts or auctions between now and opening day, and just fill the time.
Yeah, I'm doing an NFBC Draft Champions draft right now. It just started. So.
Ah, yeah, I've got CBS AL on Friday, and then are you in TGFBI?
Yeah, I'm in TGFBI. That starts on like, the 24th.
It starts Monday. So yeah, it's a slow draft, but it'll definitely keep me busy. I'm down this year. It's not intended, but I'm down. I was in 9 leagues last year. How many leagues are you in?
I'm in 5. That's my limit.
My goal is always to keep below double digits, but this year I'm down 3, and I might be down 4 because the Agnew that I'm in, they announced the auction or the draft. Oh, it's an auction. They announced the auction. I'm like, yeah, I'm not available. I can't do it. So I don't know how that's going to be resolved. I just found that out today, but I might be down to 5, which isn't bad. I've noticed that the best players tend to be in 3 or 4 at most. And there's something to be said for not spreading yourself too thin and, you know, just getting completely overwhelmed with all the different leagues and teams you have, especially when there's almost no overlap.
Have you ever been in a Draft Champions League?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. Those are the 50-round slow drafts where you just the draft and hold league. So.
Yeah, I did a slow draft last year. One of the leagues that I'm not doing this year, at least haven't been invited to, was Fantrax had a beat the expert, and I was the expert, and that was a 50-round draft and hold. So I did that draft and did that format. I think I finished 4th out of 15 teams. I was in 1st or 2nd most of the year. And then the last month, and this is the thing about draft and hold, a lot of pitchers got hurt, and that pretty much just knocked me off my perch.
Yeah, you need to draft, I think, at least 23 pitchers of your 50 picks. You really have to be real pitcher heavy with those drafts.
Well, I did, but the problem I had was that I think Charlie Morton was one of the pitchers, and you know he got hurt, which I figured he would at some point. I had McCullers, you know, he got hurt. And I think outside of Miles Michaelis, who I took, I don't know, the 20th round, which was obviously great, and I had Kluber, which was fine, but all the other pitchers I had in the back end just either lived up to expectations or completely disappeared. And, you know, when a 28th round pitcher lives up to expectations, that just means he's replacement level.
Yeah, what I like about those drafts is how, you know, it almost counts as like a half a league for me. It's like you have a really intense draft, and you just get to do the lineups during the season. So it doesn't take up too much time after that.
How much is NFBC? Is that once a week or twice a week do you do lineups?
It's once a week for the whole lineup, and once a week you could do hitters. You could change your hitters twice a week, and the pitchers just once a week.
Yeah, so Fantrax was twice a week. So, yeah, I tend to agree where it's not super involved. And, you know, honestly, I know some people love daily moves. I hate leagues like that because the Agnew League I'm in is like that. But it just feels like a job. Like it just winds up feeling, I got to do this. And if you have anything going on in your life at all, like a vacation, for example, you're like, oh, my gosh, like I've got to put in all these lineups, like I'm going to put all these lineups ahead of time before my vacation and then hope that nothing happens while I'm on vacation so I don't get like 4 or 5 days of dead stats, because I'm not going to like I'm going to Dominican in April. I'm not going to sit there and you know, on a beach and like be like, oh my gosh, like what if, you know, what if Cody Allen is injured this week? I have to replace him. I want to enjoy my vacation.
I like to be in at least one daily lineup league just because I like, you know, I hate the weekly element where, you know, Tout and does Labor do midweek DL substitutions? I'm not sure about
that. No, Labor yeah. Does not. So
the original reason why I always like daily, you know, daily transaction leagues is because, you know, your guy gets injured. And it just so happens that all my players always get injured on Monday or Tuesday. So it just so happens that way. So that could be very frustrating.
I agree. It's nice having the option. That's for sure. Like I don't like something happening on a Monday and being locked in, especially if you have a league with the reserve list. Cause then you're like, well, like what's the point of my reserve list if I just have to sit here with a dead spot for 5 or 6 days? I agree.
Yeah. And I think Towers actually this year changed the DL rule where I think we used to have to wait like till the next day to put the guy on the DL. And I think it's now you get that day back for some reason. So I think that's,
I'm in the only league, so it's still pretty limited. I mean, realistically, especially if it's a hitter, it's not like I have, usually the option you have is somebody awful anyway. Although the week that Mark Reynolds hit 4 home runs, I had him on, or the day he hit 4 home runs, I had him on the bench. So it was just one of those, like he was doing nothing and like I was like debating whether to put him in or not. I left him down. Of course, he had 4 home runs. So that's kind of the fun and agony of only leagues. Like random stuff like that happens. You're like, oh my gosh, like I've I've got nothing in the lineup, and you know, the week I sit Reynolds is the week he has a 4-home run game.
Yeah, so I'll be sitting in for, you're doing the AL CBS League on this Friday, right? That's the league you're doing.
Friday at noon Eastern. Yep.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think you'd follow it online, so there's no way to track that.
Yeah, so I'll be I'm just sitting. One of our writers, Darius Austin, is going to be competing in it, so I'm just going to be sitting in for him because he's going to be about half hour late. So I'll just be holding the fort for him for a half hour and then just popping out of the room. So I'll just tag him in.
I got to warn you, unlike Labor and Tout, the prices are really high and aggressive, particularly on the top players. So it's going to be eye opening for you to see. Have you used a CBS auction room before?
Yeah, I have for both baseball and football, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I mean, you know how that goes, where like if you're not careful, I like to enter the number as opposed to doing plus one, because you can, if you're not careful, it could be a plus six if everybody's hitting the plus one button at the same time.
Yeah, it goes very fast. It goes like sold, like really quickly. So.
I've seen people do that too, where you know they're thinking, oh, I'm gonna, that's probably like the prices are so high. Someone's like, oh, I'm gonna get Mike Trout for like, you know, 42. They hit the plus one, and all of a sudden he's at 48, and it's like, oh, great. Like, I've got Mike Trout at 48.
Yeah, so Darius is going to give me his bid limit list, and I'm going to pretty much go by his his direction. But like you said, at the same time, I'm going to be keeping an eye on that those crazy prices and maybe being a little more liberal with my upping my bid by a dollar or two, if it's necessary to get the player he wants. So.
All right, well, we've had our free form as usual, but I think we're going to – we're going to wrap up. I think we're about at an hour. So we'll take a little break and we'll come right back. Thank you once again for listening to episode 186 of Flags Fly Forever and the Labor Mixed podcast. Don't forget the Baseball Prospectus Annual is out and available. You can buy it at Amazon.com as well as at bookstores. I was at Barnes & Noble this weekend and I saw it there. So, you know, whether you like to actually have it in hand or you want to buy it online, there's a number of ways to buy it. Don't forget to rate review our podcast, Stitcher, iTunes, etc., etc. Once again, I'm Mike Gianella, and with me, as always, has been Zach Steinhorn and Jen Mock Ramos. Next week, we will talk about starting pitchers, and currently we are slated to have a special guest. We're very excited. I won't mention him in case he can't make it. But until then, we will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening.